have a quorum yet, but we're going to start the process, and when we do get a quorum, we're going to interrupt and start the official of the meeting. Just a couple of announcements first, and that is that we're going to be skipping around in the agenda to try to accommodate people that, particularly from Greater Minnesota, that want to be able to go home early. So, Representative Reinhart, why don't we start with you? Representative Sertich, let me just tell you which ones we're going to consider first. The Sertich, Reinhart, Junky, Hilty, Erdahl, and Marlbells will be first on the agenda. So, Representative Reinhart, we don't have a quorum yet, but maybe you can start explaining your bill. And members, these are not in the right order. We'll make motions when we get the quorum. We need a couple more. But it's House File 2405, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
And so would you like to just at least explain your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, this is a bill that would put a constitutional question on the ballot this fall before the voters to allow a provision for members of the House or Senate who are also Guard or Reserve members and that may be called to active duty during the term of their legislative service. This is a growing trend nationally. There are 25 states that have adopted some sort of legislation since 9/11. The key aspects of the bill are this addresses House and Senate members that are Guard or Reservists. The way it would work is you would notify the presiding officer of the body in writing. You would submit three names of eligible folks from your district that can fulfill the requirements of serving in legislative duty. The presiding officer, the Speaker of the House, or the President of the Senate would appoint, and that person would serve until, God willing, your safe return from your military duty. And, you know, I can stand for any questions on the substance there. The financial provision is there's a $2,000 fiscal note that any constitutional question has, and that's the administrative cost of placing it on the ballot. A couple provisions I would note based on questions I've had. This is the fourth committee that we've heard this bill in. The first one is just to be really clear that this is an option for members. It's not required for a member. And most of you probably know Guard or Reservists, common mobilization periods vary depending on the branch. If you're Air Guard, it's common to be a 90-day mobilization. Their equipment tends to be sensitive to things like sand and dust, and aren't deployed as long. If you're in the Navy like I am, it tends to be a year. If you're in the Army, it can be 18 months. So, you know, an Air Guard member who might be called to duty for July, August, and September might not choose to use this. Somebody who's an Army Guard person who is called for a year and a half, it might behoove them to do so. And the motivation, members, is twofold. Number one, this is going to be a growing, not a diminishing issue. The obligations of Guard and Reservists these days are very active. They're not weekend warriors. They're people that are actively fulfilling the components of our military. And if you serve for 20 years, which is sort of the sign-up, if you will, for most Guard and Reserve members, it's no longer a question of when you will be deployed, or if you will be deployed, it's when. And it's no longer a question of if you'll be deployed once. You'll be deployed five times. Every 4 or 5 years, you're up for a deployment again. So, you know, often the same people that are motivated to serve in public office are the same people that are motivated to serve in a voluntary military. So trying to put something in place that other states are doing and trying to be proactive about what I think will happen more frequently and versus less frequently. Mr. Chairman, I can try and answer some questions that I'm sure members will.
Members, are there any questions at all? The reason it's here, of course, is the small cost, but it is a cost. Just Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Reinhart, two-part question, I guess. First is what currently takes place, and the second part is what if there's an election during that time frame?
Excellent question.
Representative Reinhart.
Mr. Chair, Representative. First of all, what currently takes place, and I'm remiss for not sort of outlining that first, is your seat is just empty. There's no voice. It's not cause for resignation. It's not cause for a special election, so you're just not there. I also want to clarify, the provision is very specific about orders that call you to active duty. So, you know, we all have a two-week summer active training period. That doesn't count. Your weekend duties don't count. You can sign up for 180-day special orders. That doesn't count. This is an involuntary call to service. The second part to your question is it's only as long as your election certificate is. So if you're called to duty and you're up while you're gone, there's no overlap. There's going to be a regular election, and likely someone else is going to be replacing you.
Thank you.
Yes. Representative Hobrick, can we just interrupt a second? We do have official quorum, so I want to call the meeting to order. We do have a quorum present. The clerk will note the roll. Let's do a little bit of business first. Representative Hamilton will move the minutes from April 14th, 2010. Representative Hamilton?
So moved.
Motion before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Carried. Okay. Representative Reinert, Representative Faust, would you make a motion for that, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 2405 with recommended to be passed and sent to the General Register.
Okay, it's before us, Representative Hoberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And
I'm sorry, this one has to go to Rules Committee as well.
Chairman.
Thank you.
Sorry, I modify my amendment to Rules Committee.
Then. Thank you. Representative Hoberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Reinert, I don't have any issues with the fiscal cost. Just real briefly, why won't you allow the caucus leader to make the choice between the three people? Some of us might be the last person we'd want would be the speaker to choose our successor.
Representative Reinert.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holberg, great question. You know, in trying to draft this, two things. Number one, I followed a model from Louisiana, of all places, that had actually been put in place and used. They had had a member who had been mobilized. And secondly, I thought the official head of the body would be, I mean, I don't know how you try and take partisanship out of this, but the official head of each body seemed to me the most appropriate place to go with that. And the key aspect I would say is, you know, if you were the legislator in this situation, you're going to pick the names to give to the presiding officer of your body. So I would assume that you would pick someone who tends to represent your views in the body. And I, you know, I know as I ponder, I mean, as a reservist, this is a real, very real possibility for me. As I ponder this, I think of people in my district who have proven themselves either on a council or a county board and would serve in that caretaker model instead of it being a springboard for someone, a step up. It's someone who is willing to sort of, they've done their service, but they'd be willing to step forward for whatever period of time. But
and
Representative Hoberg?
Mr. Chair, and Representative Reinhart, as I look at this, I feel it would be less partisan if you let the caucus leaders make the appointment as opposed to the speaker.
Representative Westrum.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Reinhart, to that point, I have also sat on committees and stuff that just designate that a minority lead, the speaker appoints two and the minority leader appoints one. Would it work to just say that the respective party minority leader or speaker, those would be the two people you just have to designate depending upon the situation?
Representative Ryder.
Mr. Chairman, to both representatives, I don't have strong opposition to that. You know, this is sort of just trying to pull from somebody else's model that I had actually seen work, and that's the way they did it. I thought it made sense, but, you know, that's the fun of vetting something between four committees. Members actually, you know, throw out good ideas, and I really don't have any objection to changing that if members thought that there's a better way to do it.
Okay. We evidently expect something from the House floor.
That's right, Mr.
In the Rules Committee.
We can work on it.
Well, more appropriately, it would be the opportunity for Rules Committee for that, because that would give an opportunity for the public to weigh in on that as well, as opposed to just the House floor. Representative Ryan?
Mr. Chairman, I would welcome language suggestions. I'm certainly open to including that as an author's amendment in the next committee.
Any other discussion on the bill? If not, then Representative Faust renews his motion that House File 2405 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Rules. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Next on the agenda is House File 2690, Representative Cervich. And members, you do need to find it in your packet. They're not in order today. Representative Faust, do you want to make a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 2690 with recommendation to pass and move to General Register.
You heard the motion. Representative Cervich, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Want to give a brief discussion of your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I have before you House File 2690, a bill that saves money. It does so in five ways. It requires the executive branch to reduce state contracts by 4.4% and to try to do so with out-of-state contracts. It prohibits out-of-state travel except for emergencies and core services of the executive branch. It eliminates positions within state government, particularly in one instance, 65 managerial positions that have been created or filled since Governor Plenty instituted the hiring freeze last year. It reduces the number of assistant commissioners by 25% and gets rid of some other political appointees. Members, this bill would save a little more than $6 million this year, and when fully implemented for a biennium, will save $15 million. As we know, in trying to solve this deficit and an ongoing deficit, sometimes the last few million dollars are the hardest to come by. So when I look at priorities, I think it would be more important to not have our tax dollars going to out-of-state jobs in the way of state contracts and going to bureaucrats. I'd rather it see to protect nurses in nursing homes, school teachers, firefighters, and the like. So I'm here to stand for questions.
Questions on the bill? Any questions? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Cervich, do you have an example of the state contracts? Like, what kind of things would we discontinue?
Yes.
Representative Cervich?
Representative McNamara, one that's not general fund but has gotten a lot of attention in the past week is the Race to the Top application. I believe the state, the funding for that was about $500,000 that went to a New York company. Our eyeglasses in the Minnesota Department of Health for medical assistance used to be a Minnesota company, and that department now gave it, I believe, to a company in Kentucky, I believe. Maybe a little lower cost, but this Kentucky company has been charged with fraud. So there are Minnesota businesses that are able to do these jobs, and I think when we're prioritizing our tax dollars, we should give some preference to the Minnesota company to keep our tax dollars and jobs in Minnesota.
Representative Mahoney, did you have a question?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Cervich. Just a quick question. Is there an end date on this, or is this in perpetuity that you can't put those five particular positions in, or what?
Representative Cervich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Mahoney. I believe it's in perpetuity right now.
Other questions? Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cervich, would this also apply to, I think, Novartis, our house medical plan a year or two ago went out to an out-of-state company? That would it apply to them as well, that type of stuff?
Representative Cervich.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, it would be money in the general fund area. And it's just asking for a 4.4% cut, so we're not specific with it. We're leaving it up to the administration to find those savings and to find the most appropriate ones. State contracts are complicated because we're not talking about breaking any agreements, because that would bring with it some liabilities legally. So we're looking for state agencies and the executive branch to find this 4.4%.
Okay. So,
Mr. Westrom?
Mr. Chair, I've got a disconnect. It's just the discussion with Representative McNamara with the eyeglasses and the Race to the Top contract. How does that fit into your example as of savings? If they used it in Minnesota, used somebody in Minnesota, it would have been cheaper, or I didn't follow that.
Representative Cervich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Westrom. Potentially we could find somebody cheaper in Minnesota, but it's also a prioritization where we give preference to Minnesota companies over out-of-state companies.
Representative McNamara.
Just a quick follow-up to that point. Representative Cervich, some states have reciprocity agreements that if we null and void contracts with out-of-state firms, then automatically firms in Minnesota would be subjected to that. This doesn't go to the MnDOT's contract work.
Mr. Chair, no, it does not, and that's why we left it up to the flexibility of the administration to look at where those contracts are, that we don't want to negatively impact any Minnesota business on this.
Other questions? Representative Bunn?
Thank you. Two questions. One is, if you could elaborate a little more on and point me to the exact language in the bill, I'm looking for it quickly, about the how restrictive the requirement that they look at in-state firms first is. I am familiar with the eyeglass case. The bids from state business rate contract were significantly higher than that one, so it would increase the general fund budget for the state if we did that, although I'd never heard the fraud issue before, so certainly those are issues we should take into account. So I just want to know how restrictive that is in terms of requiring them to buy in-state. And secondly, a more general question is in terms of looking at the first page of the fiscal note, you know, the vast, vast majority of these savings are in the Minnesota Management and Budget line of the fiscal note. If you could explain the background in terms of why that's where all the most of the savings are relative to other agencies, I would like to hear that as well.
Okay, the first one, Representative Sertich.
Mr. Chair, I'm looking right now at the language. I'm trying to find it. It would be on... It's on the first page of the new the new language, the underlying language, and it is line 1.25, to the extent possible. And we're talking about reductions here and not, you know, and it would be new contracts. So, once again, trying to maintain some flexibility there to find savings. To the second question about MMB being the place where most of the reductions take place, I believe MMB...
maybe fiscal staff can help us with that.
That'd be helpful. I think there's some assumptions in the in this, and they have most of the contracts. But Mr. Marks probably has a better answer than I have.
Mr. Marks,
Mr. Chair, members, on the fiscal note, Minnesota Management and Budget was responsible for explaining the $4 million reduction in contracts. So the $4 million, while the reduction in contracts will be across state agencies, it's all showing up under MMB in the fiscal note.
Okay.
Other questions? Other questions? If not, then Representative Faust renews his motion. The House File 2690 be recommended to pass and placed on the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
And carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Next one is Representative Junkie, House File 3122. For those members that came in late, we're going to be jumping around a little bit. And so they're not in order. So if you just wait a second till everyone gets a chance to find it.
And Mr. Chair, while you're looking, I appreciate your accelerating the rural members. And I think your staff actually put them in order of who traveled the furthest. When I looked at Sertich, Reinhart, Junkie,
no,
Hilty, Erdahl.
That's not true.
Yes, it is true. Opposed five, Mr.
But I changed.
Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, a little advice. Don't argue with the chair.
I thought it would have paused.
Would you like to make a motion again?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 3122. Recommendation have it passed and move to the General Register.
We heard the motion. Representative Junkie, it's here for the fiscal note. And would you be so kind as to explain it?
Briefly, and a lot of you have seen this if you're in commerce or commerce finance or finance, and now here. This is simply a bill that working with Department of Commerce, real estate appraisers, appraisal management companies, and real estate agents, we came up with language that's basically national language to regulate now appraisal management companies. It's a relatively new entity in the real estate business that a real estate management company or appraisal management company basically sets up the appraisal work for mortgage brokers, whether they be independent mortgage brokers or bankers or whatnot. They're typically very large multi-state companies, and then they have a network of appraisers they draw from to farm out the appraisal business. So they're kind of the appraisal middleman, if you will. And what this does, because appraisal is a very professional and regulated industry, we want to make sure that these appraisal management companies fall under those same type of regulations that other appraisers and folks that are in the business do in the state. So, again, there's been no opposition to this through the committee process. Reason it's here is there was a fiscal note, and it's gone back and forth. Right now, as you can see, it's a positive fiscal note going into the future. So we believe the fees in here will pay for the administration of this by the Commerce Department. If not, certainly we'll be back in the next year or two after this starts to adjust those fees.
The fiscal note is in your packet, I believe, and it does show a general fund savings to $27,000. Any questions on the bill or the fiscal note? Thank you. Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Junkie, does the, for lack of a better term, industry support this?
Representative Junkie.
Mr. Chair, as I said, full disclosure, I am a real estate appraiser, a certified general appraiser in the state of Minnesota. The appraisers certainly support this. Since we have to abide by the rules, we think the appraisal companies can. But again, I work with real estate agents. I worked with I worked with some appraisal management companies in the state to make sure they were fine with the language. They are. They know this is national language. Obviously, no one wants to be regulated, but they do nod that this is coming and has already come to a number of states, and we're just joining those groups. So the answer is yes. I have worked with everyone along the way, and there's been no opposition to the bill itself.
Other questions? Other questions on the bill? If not, then Representative Faust renews his motion that House File 3122 be recommended to pass and place in the general registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Then carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Next on the agenda is we're going to take up 3414, Representative Hilty. Representative Carlson, would you like to make a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would move that House File 3414 by Representative Hilty be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
We heard the motion. Representative Hilty, welcome to the committee. Want to give you an explanation of your bill first?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, the House File 3414 is a simple bill that provides for additional assessment authority for the Public Utilities Commission up to $800,000 per year, which would be dedicated to the employment of additional staff for the commission. The situation currently is that the commission is in the view of many, including the commission itself, are pretty severely understaffed, certainly compared to comparable bodies in other states. I think Minnesota ranks 47th in terms of staffing of comparable commissions or bodies, and we have reached the point with a situation that proceedings that should take weeks typically take months, and proceedings that should take months sometimes take years. And there's also a consideration that while the Public Utilities Commission staff is really very highly regarded nationally and certainly within the state as being very competent dedicated, the staff generally does not have a great deal of turnover. Many of the current staff members are approaching retirement age, and if we do not gradually alter the staff composition, we're going to end up in a situation in which we have retirements that take away much of the institutional memory, and it's a situation that we, I think, really need to avoid. So that's the bill. It has no general fund implication. It does have an increased assessment for the commission, and I would ask for member support.
Members, you'll notice there's no fiscal note on there, but there is a direct appropriation on this one, so we know what the cost is. And it's an assessment. Any questions on the bill? Any questions on the bill? Sure. Representative Demmer?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hilty, I'm sorry. Maybe I missed it when you were talking about why are we supplementing their staff? It says to implement requirements of this chapter, and, of course, I just have the one sheet here. You might have mentioned that. If you did, I missed it. Representative Hilty, could you tell us why we're increasing staff and what are the requirements of the chapter that are causing that?
Representative Hilty?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Demmer, as I did mention in my remarks, the commission staff, compared to other states, is quite low. And one of the things that we're experiencing currently and have experienced increasingly over the past several years is an increase in the cases that are brought before the commission, increases in rate cases, requirements for the commission to consider other cases and other issues before them than we have seen in the past. Staff is currently pretty severely stressed, according to the testimony of the executive director of the commission, and certainly it's known to members of the Energy Committee and the legislature in general.
Representative Demmer, follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, do we know what the staffing level is, and what would this take it to?
Representative Hulte?
I don't have that information in front of me, Mr. Chair. Representative Demmer, I believe the current staffing level is 66. If that's incorrect, I'll correct that for you, but I'm pretty sure that's the right number.
Maybe if there's somebody in the audience that knows that, is there anybody from the commission in the audience that would be able to? There is somebody. Do you want to? We usually don't take testimony, but we do like to have questions answered. If it'd be okay if you identify yourself for the tape.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, Dan Wolf, the Assistant Executive Secretary with the Public Utilities Commission.
And did you hear the question?
Yes, the current staff level is a full-time equivalent of 46, and this would add approximately 7 or 8 additional staffing.
Okay. Other questions? Was it Representative Mahoney?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hilty. We've had the discussion before about how the metro area ends up paying a significant portion of the energy regulations and other issues. So is this proportioned out across all the energy manufacturers and suppliers in the state, and what might cost a half a cent on the east side per customer will cost a half cent in east side of Moorhead or Worthington or Grand Marais?
Representative Hilty?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, yes, that's correct.
Other questions at all? Any other questions? Well, Representative Carlson then renews his motion in House File 3414. We recommend to pass and place in the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
And carried. Next one on the agenda is Senate File 2996. Representative Erdahl. Want to make a motion, Tim? Tim, want to make a motion? Representative Paulus?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Senate File 2996 with recommendation to pass to General Register.
Representative Erdahl, we've heard the motion. You want to explain your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. This is a bill due to a recent change in the way that the Health Department examines school concession stands. What this bill does is that all
All school concession stands on a school grounds will be charged one fee. Presently, if there are, well, the specific example, Eden Valley Watkins High School has two concession stands on their football field. And each one of them is inspected, and so there are two $150 fees. Under this, if the school assumes responsibility for additional stands on one site, there would just be one fee. It's supported by school districts, by customers, superintendents, and the health department has agreed to absorb the $35,000 cost from essentially overcharging a little bit.
Members of Representative Erdahl, it kind of says that in the fiscal notes that they're willing to do it. $35,000 is more than $3,000 or $4,000 or $10,000 that we usually say, well, you have to absorb it completely. I would like to have some kind of a communication from the Department of Health that they would indeed have the ability to absorb this.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I did this. They have testified to that at other committee stops.
There is somebody here.
There is someone here now behind me.
That's
good.
Just walked into the door. Well, welcome to the committee, if you would, please. If you'd be so kind as to state your name.
Mr. Chair, members, Barb Julek, CFO, Department of Health.
And the question is, on the fiscal note, it really doesn't say, kind of implies that you're willing to absorb it, but it doesn't state it directly. Would you be so kind as to confirm that?
Mr. Chair, members, the fiscal note reflects a revenue loss to our food inspection program that we'd be able to absorb within that larger program.
All right. Any other discussion? Any other questions at all? Thank you very much. Did you get a name?
Mm-hmm.
From the Department of Health, if you'd be so kind, we need to have you sign that as well. Representative Paulson, would you renew his motion that Senate File 2996 you recommend to pass and place in the General Registry? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Next on the agenda, we'll consider 2753 Morrow. Representative Reiner, would you like to make a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 2753 be passed and referred to the General Register.
We've heard the motion. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, House File 2753 gives MnDOT two types of bond authority. One, bond authority of $30 million for trunk highway projects year 2011. This would include design-build projects. There was one project of this type down in St. Peter this past summer. And so this would give the commissioner that authority. And then the $70 million that is listed in the bill is for interchange projects, split 50%, Greater Minnesota 50%, the metro area. The governor and the commissioner had held a press conference during the interim about the importance of interchange projects for economic development. I have talked with MnDOT. MnDOT is neutral on the bill. MnDOT does say, though, it can't handle the debt service if this bill should be enacted. I'd be happy to stand for any questions.
Questions at all before the bill? Any questions at all? Questions? If not, then Representative Briner to renew her motion that House File 2753 be recommended to pass, placed in the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? And carry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Representative Horkman, is she in the room? She was. She is. We can go down the House File 605. Representative Swales, would you like to make a motion? We'll move these around a little bit.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to move House File 605 and that it will be placed on the General Register.
We've heard the motion. Representative Portman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I presume you would like me to be very brief. We had a very brief discussion in finance. The legislature shares responsibility with the Department of Transportation for oversight of our state's infrastructure, and the goal of House File 605 is to keep us a little bit better informed about management changes at the agency in the past 2 years to sort of change the way that we conduct bridge inspections and the follow-up activities, and also in looking at the way we manage debt at the agency. Everybody here knows we have a general obligation debt guideline, and in recent years the Department of Transportation has been encouraged to adopt a debt management policy also. And so this would get more dialogue between MnDOT and the legislature on that issue and others. And I can stand for questions. If
questions. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hortman, is there a requirement in the bill that actually all the deputy commissioners be registered engineers?
Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, no. In the bill at Section 5, it requires that either the commissioner of MnDOT or the deputy commissioner be a professional engineer.
Mr. Chair,
either
one, just so there's one registered engineer. Chair, wasn't that current law? Didn't we already do this?
No, Mr. Chair. Representative Morrow and Representative McNamara, Representative Morrow had a bill on this topic last year, and it didn't move very far.
There is a change in the law, as you read at this on page 4. The current law doesn't dictate that, but there is a change. Other questions on this provision? Any other questions? There is a fiscal note from the Truck Highway Fund that's in your packet. Any other questions? If not, then Representative Sales. Renews the motion then. House File 605. We recommend the pass and place in the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Representative Mowry, we'll go down to you. 2600.
No. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hillstrom, would you like to move this one, please?
I would, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom moves the House File 2600. We recommend to pass and place on the General Registry. Representative Mowry, want to explain your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes. Mr. Chairman, members, this is the Minnesota SAFE Act. It's called the Minnesota Secure and Fair Enforcement for Mortgage Licensing Act. It's a requirement by the federal government, and it's administered by HUD. We are the only state in the country that didn't pass it last year, so we have to pass it this year. It has to be in compliance with HUD regulations, and we believe everything in the present form is in compliance. What it does is it regulates people who advise people on mortgages, and it's because of all that happened in recent years, it does two things. It creates a national registry, so bad characters, they can't move to another state. It also requires education, and because it's not just to get at bad characters if you're really incompetent in advising people regarding the biggest investment in their life, that can be extremely serious also. So there's provisions to go after bad actors, there's provisions for education, and basically that's the bill. And if you have any questions, open to them.
Any questions on the bill? Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mowry, what happens if we don't adopt this?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, the federal law provides that they will then step in and license us and charge us for whatever they want to for licensing and regulating our anybody doing this business.
Thank you.
Dammer.
Oh, and Mr. Chairman, I forgot to say the association that represents these people, I think it's the Minnesota Mortgage Association, they said to say that they're in full support of it.
Representative Dammer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mowry, does this, I understand this is something we need to do because of the federal government. Is this lining us up with what the feds are requiring? Are we going beyond what they're requiring? I assume we're at least as much as they're saying. But where are we at with that? Are we going beyond that? Is there any differences?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Dimmer, there's There is one provision that hasn't been yet formally approved. The rest of this is all from the Model Act, and I've been talking to the guy at HUD that's in charge of this division that regulates the SAFE Act, and he hasn't been back in the last few days, and but his assistant thought that the language we added was for Habitat for Humanity. What he told me that the federal government, they have a special kind of mortgage that doesn't have payments on it and zero interest, and so the people that would be taking and working with that don't need as much expertise. And so we would, what we're doing here is the department would certify them if they qualify under that, and apparently Congress is going to pass that exemption from what the guy at HUD told me. So, and our provision only applies if HUD specifically allows it.
Okay. Other questions on that? Any other questions? If not, then Representative Hillstrom renews her motion that House File 2600 be recommended to pass and placed in the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. And
thank you, Minister.
People, we'd like to have you bring in money. That's nice. next on the agenda, let's see, Representative Hillstrom. I'm sorry, we'll take yours, then we'll take Representative Hornstein.
Okay.
Yours.
Mr. Chair, I move that House File 2990 be recommended pass and be sent to the General Register.
Representative Hillstrom makes that motion. We have before us. And you want to just give a brief explanation, then I have a small amendment for your bill.
Members, this is the State Guardian Ad Litem Board. This is an initiative of the Judicial Council. It basically makes the Guardian Ad Litem program have a board like the Public Defense Board. The only controversy that has really come about on this bill has been by the current volunteer guardians. I'm sure you've been getting emails saying they would like to have guardians as members of the board. Up until this point, I have not taken amendments to do that, and I'm asking members to not do that as well. Members, this is a governance board, and they're going to manage the $12.5 million budget. This is modeled after the Public Defense Board, and this comes out of an advisory committee that was commissioned in the fall of 2006 and convened in 2007, and the Judicial Council has asked that we not do that. It would be a little challenging, I think, to have current guardians who are now going to be state employees managing themselves.
Questions at all? There is an amendment at your desk. Let me take that amendment, if you would. It's A5, and I would move that amendment. And what that does on line 5, page 35, we're trying our best to get any special revenue monies not in the general fund itself designated into the special revenue account where it belongs. And staff has found one more reference to that. I think it's non-controversial. It just makes the accounting was supposed to be what it's supposed to be.
And I support the amendment.
Okay. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Carried. Representative Munn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hillstrom, how long has the program existed, and what problem was identified in that commission report that indicated they need to move this direction? Just briefly, I know this is...
The Guardian, thank you, Representative Salt, Mr. Chair. I don't know the date that the Guardians have existed, but when the state took over the court system, mm-hmm. the states also took over the Guardian Ad Litem program was part of it. And then the Judicial Council felt that it was a conflict of interest for them to manage the guardian ad litems, appoint the guardian ad litems, and have the guardian ad litems then report back to them and them to take their recommendations in deciding what's in the best interest of the child. So they felt that this takes care of the conflict by having a separate board, much like the Public Defense Board, that then would manage how the guardian program works.
Okay, Representative Mahoney, did you have a question?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hillstrom, Does the Public Defense Board have lawyers on it?
Representative Hailstrom?
Thank you. Representative Solberg, they have lawyers, but they don't have current public defenders on the board.
Well, Mr. Chair, I won't offer the amendment, but I've unfortunately or fortunately created my share of boards, and I always try to at least put one person that you're regulating onto the board, because quite often when you're two or three or four steps removed, you don't really understand what's going on in the trenches. As you know, I've dealt with a few guardians ad litem lately over the last 3 or 4 years, and the program does have its issues, and so I'm not so keen on the idea of the governor being so smart or the Supreme Court justice being so smart or the whoever else it is that's going to be so smart that they can figure out what's going on in the courtroom from the guardian ad litem, particularly since how they're volunteers. I don't know that they get all paid for the money that they get paid. If they do, they may as well be declared as volunteers, but I'll leave it at that, Representative
Thank you. Mr. Chair and Representative Mahoney, actually part of what's been happening to the guardian ad litem program is they became state employees. And so these actually are paid guardians. And so, yes, there is a group of volunteer guardians that have existed and that will consistently be used in the future. But we're talking about the guardian ad litem program now are state employees. So you would be putting a state employee on the board of the management team that would be managing the state employees. And so the Senate did offer the amendment. It did go on in a divided vote, 30 to 28, with the author of the bill, I believe, being in opposition to it. We have been attempting. We've had 14 other folks that have asked to all be on the board, to have a named designated person on the board. And so once we start opening this up, we do get into, people want folks with expertise in domestic violence. People want expertise in Indian child welfare. People want expertise in any number of areas. And up until this point, we've been successful in keeping all of those named folks off because we want a small board. Because the more folks you have on the board will get a reimbursement. And the more folks you have on the board, the less money there will be for the program. So,
Mr. Representative Mahoney.
I think I made my point in that all of a sudden you have other people regulating other people. And we've made boards lately all over across the state and have put one of the members have typically been one of the people being regulated, they can bring the perspective of the regulated to the board. You chose not to. You're the author of the bill. I will leave it at that.
Other questions on the bill? Any other questions on the bill? If not, then Representative Hailstrom renews her motion that House File 2990 be recommended to pass and placed on the General Registry. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried.
Thank you, members.
Representative Hailstrom, good luck. I was the chief author of the Public Defenders program. I recall one Sunday morning about 5 o'clock, the phone alongside my bed rang, and there was an attorney from one of the counties who was really upset with me. But he wasn't nearly as upset with me as my wife was with him for calling at 5 o'clock on Sunday morning. So the Representative Hornstein, two H07, the chair will move House File 2807. There's quite a few amendments to this, and just as a point of information, members, the House File 2754, the Winkler bill, has been asked to be postponed. House File 3046, the Rood bill, has been asked to be postponed also. So we're going through our agenda a little bit quicker today because of that. And Representative Carlson, you're on the committee, so we're going to make you sit here. Representative Hornstein. but the chair has moved House File 2807. Representative Hornstein, do you want to explain your bill first?
Sure.
Then we'll take the amendments.
That sounds right. Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 2807 is the Omnibus Transportation Policy Bill. And this has actually passed this committee already, this biennium, because it ended up being vetoed by the governor. So,
but not the same number.
Right, exactly. Same content, but different number. And so what we've done, Mr. Chair and members, is look very closely at the veto letter, and we took out the three specific provisions in last year's bill that you passed that were objectionable to the governor. And those relate to a railroad safety provision, which is actually my bill, that just asked us to, as a state, to follow federal railroad safety laws when it came down to planning for passenger rail and the rail plan. So that was deleted. A second provision also had to do with rail, and that was we had a Senate provision that was incorporated in the bill. It wasn't a House provision, but it related to the routing of a possible high-speed rail line from Chicago to the Twin Cities. It was a little more too prescriptive, I think, for the governor, so we took that out. And then there was Representative Gardner's and Senator Dibble's provision around the Council for Disabilities and Transit, and we have modified that, and there'll be an amendment today on that to try to accomplish the goals that we had set out last year, but also acknowledge the governor's concerns. We also, I think, we should get some extra credit because we also took out some provisions that MnDOT didn't like that weren't in the governor's veto letter that related to some provisions around environmental review for Highway 14. Representative Broad had some provisions around rerouting a state highway temporarily around a festival in New Prague. I think those issues got resolved on their own, but we also deleted that from the bill. So if you're looking for those provisions in this bill, they're not there. So I think it's mission accomplished in terms of where we're at to date, and the bill is pretty much the same as you passed it, minus those provisions. And I have had a few members approach me, I think for good reason, wanting to add several provisions to the bill today. Those are the amendments that you'll be reviewing. I've looked at these amendments. I've talked to the authors. I don't find any of this particularly controversial. I will say we haven't communicated yet with the governor's office on them. It's our intention to do that. And I'll say, Mr. Chairman, and on the public record, that it's my intention that no matter what the Senate loads onto this and what we figure out in conference committee, that I really want a bill that the governor will sign this year, and that's what we're working towards. So that's the process, and I'd be happy to answer any questions about the bill before we get to any amendments. But you've seen this, and I think passed it last year in large part.
Okay, any questions on the bill as it is before us right at the present time? Any questions on the bill as it is? If not, members of the fiscal notice that right now we're down to $3,000, so we assume that the...
I think we made money in the last year, Mr.
Yeah, yeah. But there are some amendments on the... And is it the A7 amendment that you wish to take first? Is that correct?
Sure. I mean, A7 is Representative Morrow's bill. He is here today with us, if members have questions. But this bill just modifies statutory language concerning public transit in greater Minnesota and MnDOT's management of that. It amends the Greater Minnesota Transit Investment Plan by meeting total needs rather than 80%.
Wait a second. I don't know if that's exactly correct or not.
Okay.
We have before us the House File 3487, the Morrow Bill. 3486, I'm sorry.
Okay.
And A7 seems to be similar, but there are a couple of terms that are out of
okay.
that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Morrow is here. I think he can speak a little more authoritatively than I can about it.
Representative Morrow, what I'm noticing is on the amendment A7, after line 1.7, and I'm comparing it with 3486, there seems to be a sentence that's missing on it. Is that intentional or?
Mr. Chair, can we lay over this amendment and represent
more? Sure, we'll draw the amendment until later on. Then we have the A5 amendment.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, A5 is Representative Leader, and the chairman would like to incorporate this amendment that relates to special plates concerning wounded combat veterans and eligibility. It's technical cleanup language. I think there's some concern here that this may not be considered in the Senate, and it's important to the chairman, and he's here if anyone has any questions.
The chair would move the A5 amendment. Any discussion on the A5 amendment? Representative Holbrook, anybody?
Mr. Chair, this is an attempt to get at the proliferation of special plates and the costs, and it's a good idea. And completely supportive of cheerleaders' attempt to deal with an issue that just never goes away.
Yeah, except adding more. All those that the chair renews his motion, the A5 amendment. Any other discussion on that? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. We have an A6 amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. A6 is Representative Gardner's bill. And again, this was incorporated last year. It survived the conference committee. It went on to the final bill on the floor. And there was a veto.
Would you like to move this one?
Mr. Chair, you're talking about the A6 amendment?
A6, yes.
I don't even know what.
Okay.
This is.
Is Representative Gardner?
Well, I'll just explain a little of the history of this. So we established a council to deal with paratransit issues, and there was some concern about per diem. That was in the governor's veto letter, and so we're trying to, this amendment I think just takes the legislature out of the process, but I'll ask Representative Gardner to discuss it.
Representative Gardner, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
We don't actually officially have A6 before us yet. Why don't I just move A6 so we get it before us? Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Member Senator Dibble and I have been trying to find a way to instigate more collaboration among state and local agencies as it relates to paratransit, which is transit for people with disabilities and seniors and so on. There is something that was created by executive order called the Interagency Committee on Transit Coordination, or ICTIC for short, that has been meeting, and it's a group of state agencies. The NCSL believes that entities created by executive order don't really have a lot of permanence and are less effective than those that are created by legislation. What this part of the bill would do is elevate that council, or that committee, to be a council. And to the governor's credit, in his veto letter, he said there's good stuff in this part, and I will expand the ICTIC to include all the other members, like Veterans Affairs and the Department of Education, to make sure that they are consulted. The Department of Commerce, because there's some insurance liability issues. But we still think there needs to be some tighter relationship with the legislature so we can actually help state agencies do what needs to be done to make their job easier. We talked a lot about today with Representative Swalesville about collaboration. That fits in this with this quite well. But the language in the amendment actually deletes the language that makes members of the legislature members of that council. Not that we have to do what the Senate does, but the Senate seems to be removing legislators from councils and commissions and so on, and we're just trying to make it a little more seamless on both sides of the House, or sides of the Capitol.
Other questions on the amendment? Then the chair will renew his A6 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Thank you.
An A8 amendment, Representative Hornstein. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The A8 amendment.
Want to move the amendment, Representative Hillstrom?
I will move the A8 amendment. Mr. Chair and members.
Go ahead, Representative Hillstrom.
This is the Troopers Tax Compliance Bill that we passed out of this committee already. I worked with Representative Holberg to address the issues that she brought up. Senator Murphy amended this provision onto Representative Hornstein's bill in the Senate, and so I just would like to put it in this bill as well because we already passed it.
Representative Holberg, I understand you've worked out some language.
Right. Mr. Chair, my concern, some may remember when the bill originally was came through the committee, the payment for the additional staff came all out of road money, and the increased compliance, if it happens, the money would be distributed to both roads and transit, so I felt like that the initial money to fund the should be done in proportion to the projected revenue increase. And so this does that. It takes a lot of pages, but basically takes part of the funding for the initial investment in the staff to do the research from both roads and transit, as they both will benefit from the increased compliance.
Any discussion on the amendment? All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed and carried. Members, we're not going to be offering the A7 amendment at the present time, so that is not before us. Okay. Any other discussion on the bill?
Who made the motion for the bill? Who made the
motion?
You did.
Yeah. Okay. Any other discussion on the bill? If not, then the chair will renew his motion at House File 2807. As amended, be recommended to pass and placed on the general registry. Before we vote on that, Representative Hornstein, Milo provision that got vetoed last year is in here now?
Yes.
Well, I don't even remember what it is.
Yeah.
But thank you.
Something with registrar.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Carried.
No.
Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair members. Appreciate it.
Representative Carlson, I wanted to go, and then would you go get Representative Hanson is in. Yeah, you're next. He'll be the next one as well. Okay. He's in Mary Murphy's. And I think if he cannot come down here, someone else.
Chairman, may I the last bill up then?
Second to the last bill.
Your next bill before finance was going to be the last.
I guess it might be. Representative Carlson, do you want to make a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move that House File 2577 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Rules Committee.
We know what the motion is. We've heard the motion. Representative Carlson, it's here because it's a constitutional amendment, and it's a cost of $2,000 Secretary of State will absorb, but do you want to explain your bill?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the House File 2577 amends the Constitution to allow the legislature to call a special session. Under this proposal, the legislature would need the agreement of the presiding officers of both bodies and approval by the committees with jurisdictional rules in each body to call a special session. Currently, legislatures in 33 states have this capacity, including our neighboring states of Iowa and Wisconsin and another Midwestern state, Missouri. In the vast majority of these states, the legislature rarely calls a special session. However, the ability of the state legislature to call a special session would provide a balance between the branches of government and reduce the gridlock that results when the governing bodies do not agree. This change would have allowed the legislature to respond quickly to catastrophic events. For example, when the I-35 bridge collapsed and the floods hit southeastern Minnesota, there was ongoing confusion about whether the governor would call a special session or not. At times such as these, any delay is costly. The state legislature was ready to act, and these changes would have given us the ability to do so. Finally, the bill allows for additional transparency and flexibility in the process by limiting the number of legislative days to 7. It allows enough time for the public to be able to participate and the flexibility to shape legislation based on that dialogue, while at the same time ensuring these issues are resolved in a timely manner. So with that, Mr. Chairman, you already indicated upon the introduction that it's here because there is a small cost to the Secretary of State's office, but the history of that when the constitutional amendment goes through, the Secretary of State absorbs those costs.
The discussion on the bill before us. Any discussion on the bill before us? Any discussion? If not, then Representative Carlson renews his motion that House File 2577 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Rules. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No. No.
And carried. And members, we have one left. Representative Hansen has, I know, a bill up in another committee as well. I would like to be able to deal with that today. It is a... one that has gone through, I think, the Transportation Committee, is it not, Representative Holbrook?
Mr. Chair, I believe that it has.
Yeah. It is a pretty straightforward that it's just increasing the ability for deputy registrars to have a fee increase from 6, page 1.9 and lines 1.11, I think, are the changes. Fiscal note gives us a special revenue of $986,000. Why don't, if there's no objections from anybody, is it okay if we consider this? Anybody objecting at all? If not, then the chair will move the House File 2116. We recommend to pass and place on the general registry. We have the fiscal chair of fiscal note before us. Any discussion on it? If not, then Representative Hansen is really lucky. He didn't show up. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. He did not indicate to me that there was any amendments, but I maybe can reconsider. We can get some amendments on there, huh? And put a Christmas tree on it. Members, thank you very much for coming this evening. Announcements, I think we will not be meeting on Monday. Next week we will have, at least I know on Wednesday, probably a late evening meeting, late afternoon to evening meeting. Plan on that. Probably a meeting Tuesday. It depends upon what Representative Carlson sends us for some other bills. We do have several bills. The environmental bill is before us. We have the outdoor heritage bill before us. We need to kind of move those along and get them to the House floor. If not, any other questions?
Yeah, we also thought it was the health bill on Wednesday.
I think on Wednesday we'll probably have the health and human services bill as well.
Right.
Yeah, and that's the plan. But keep in mind that everything is fluid.
Of course.
Okay, with that, thank you very much, and the meeting is adjourned.